And obviously for those that have been here all day this morning and this afternoon for our step study workshop, we were given a good gift in listening to a man with over 43 years of sobriety describe and tell his experience with our 12 steps. And it's 8 years since a little over 8 years last May that I asked Johnny to be my sponsor. And in those last 8 years, he lives in Long Beach, California, so it's obviously I don't get to sit in meetings with my sponsor. But for those last 8 years, when I have an opportunity to be with him and be able to look him in the eye and listen to his experience, boy, I take it, and I treasure those moments. So this has been an extraordinary meeting and a day for me, and I thank you for the privilege of that. And with no further ado, I'll give you Johnny H. from Long Beach, California.
Moment there, I thought I was in Fox Hall in Nevada. I want to leave you with a visual or introduce you to a visual. Can you imagine Rita on speed? That's a visual you can take home with you tonight. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink of alcohol or a mood-altering or antidepressant drug, any light marijuana or non-habit-forming heroin, no near beer, since sometime before the fourth day of November 1959, which is a long time between drinks. And I considered some type of a privilege to be allowed to come here and share my experience, strength, and hope with people about what the good things, the good blessing that's been bestowed on me since my introduction and right up to this very day at Alcoholics Anonymous. And I consider it a privilege to be allowed to come and sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope I don't ever get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on here just because I stumbled into a room and got sober and stayed that way. Because everything that's good and decent in my life is a direct result of the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I hope I always remember that. I tell you that I was an alcoholic. And what I just told you in so many words is that I have, according to the medical association, the number one killer in the world today. I'm also afflicted with the second leading cause of permanent insanity in the world today, called alcoholism. Now, I didn't know that when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not really interested in statistics anyhow. But when I hold up my hand and say I'm an alcoholic, or I admit to an open group and I'm an alcoholic, those things flash to my mind and let you know that this is not some type of a social obligation or some type of a social function that you go to. There are people in this room who are going to die drunk. And they're going to die drunk, going down for the last count with their fist, shaking their fist at you and say, you don't seem to understand my case is different. I really don't understand what you're talking about. Alcohol was not my enemy. Alcohol was my friend. And when I quit drinking, everything got right. Now, I didn't know that when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. My first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in November 1959, I didn't come here to get sober. I was as physically sober when I got to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. It's physically sober. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because the institution I was in let women come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous almost 45 years ago to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around her ever since. So it doesn't make any difference why you got here. I don't even know why I'm alcoholic, to tell you the truth, except I think it has something to do with drinking alcohol. You can't be an alcoholic if you haven't drank. I'm sorry. You know, we have people say they have a desire, and the key to the word of that is stop. can't stop something you ain't done. I really don't know. I was as baffled sitting in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous the other day. I don't know why I'm alcoholic. I don't know what there is about me. One out of maybe 10 people in the world who have this abnormal reaction to alcohol didn't have it. And I've always been restless, irritable, and discontented as far back as I could ever remember. I've always had some type of knowledge in the back of my head somewhere that there was something wrong with me. I don't know what it was. And I believe from the very depths of my soul, and sure it's been told in my inventory, that I've spent my entire lifetime searching for whatever it was wrong with me. Now, the problem with that is you can't seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what it is. And you just reach out and grab at straws. Now, I didn't know what was wrong with me. Not at all. In this journey and this search that I made from my earliest recollection of life to try to find out the answer to this dilemma that I was in, I didn't know what was wrong with me. I knew a lot about whiskey. Everybody in my family drank whiskey. I mean, they made it, and they sold it, and they drank it. They were Irish. They had no religion to hold their guilt down, so they just went crazy to people. I mean, they were the goofiest goddamn bunch of people you've ever seen in your life. I mean, they went to penitentiaries. They worked in whorehouses. They beat each other up. They stole each other's women. They drank each other's whiskey, and they called it having a good time. They were having fun, they told me. They just, you know, and every once in a while, I guess whoever survived that was the king for the week. I don't know how they worked their deals out down there. But that never seemed to bother me because there's always been that little sickness within me that understands violence. I've always understood that. I've never had anybody explain it to me, but I've always understood what type of a spiritual experience it would be to put your foot in somebody's belly. It just, I know that's a little sick, but that, I've always known that way. What I was never able to comprehend is why these people who did that to one another would put their arms around one another on Wednesdays and say things like, we love one another because we're family. Now, I don't know, because it was never exposed on the psychiatrist's couch, if that scarred me or not. But I do know that I never uttered that word to another human being prior to coming to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time after I was here. It wasn't in my vocabulary. I started looking for a way out of this dilemma a long time before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, a long, long time ago. And I never seemed to find it. My grandmother, who lived till she was 90 years old and never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life, wouldn't think it's a big deal. I've been sober almost 45 years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. So you should have had a couple, Granny, make you feel better from time to time. My grandmother got everything she needed out of church. And I sat around and watched my mother get up on Sunday morning after Sunday morning in that war zone, and she called her home with the kids of hers laying all over the floor, you know, and her husband drunk out in the yard somewhere. I watched my grandmother do that Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. She'd get up, put the best thing she had on, she left, come back somewhere later, a couple hours later, something happened to her. I could see that. I'd seen something. My grandmother was not the same coming back as she was going out. And I thought, because I don't know any better, I thought all I'm going to have to do is go where my grandmother goes and do what my grandmother does. I'd be like my grandmother. See, I'm not like my grandmother. My grandmother's not an alcoholic. You couldn't pour enough whiskey in my grandmother to make an alcoholic. See, you can't manufacture alcoholics. I mean, it's like being pregnant. You either are or you ain't. And the longer you go, the more it shows. That's the way that works. It's really true. I didn't know that. When I went over and sat in my grandmother's church. I went to my grandmother one day, sat in my grandmother's church, waiting to feel like my grandmother. And I don't remember anything happening to me at all. But I found out later on in life, after I come to AA, there was nothing wrong with my grandmother's church. There was something wrong with a jackass sitting in it. Me. See, what I was doing in my church, what I've done all my life, not just sitting in my grandmother's church, I'm looking for something way out here to make me feel better in here, which only goes to prove to me that the problem's always been there. And I found what I thought was an answer, and it was a good answer for a while. Sitting on the back porch of my grandfather's house watching my grandfather drink whiskey out of a fruit jar. He put it down, went somewhere, and I picked it up and took a drink of it. That's all it did. The next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. Well, I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out there in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have this abnormal reaction to alcohol. It wasn't a bad reaction, really. It was kind of a good reaction, if you want to know the truth. I mean, if it was a bad reaction, I'd have never drank it again. I hear people talk about, I took a drink of that awful stuff, and gagged and snot come out my nose, and peed in my pants and puked and went on like that. That's not my experience. I mean, that stuff went in down inside of me and did something for me, which was another indication that I'm an alcoholic. It did something for me. It was doing the same thing to everybody, but it was doing something for me. And I triggered a pattern for living that day that took me down to the very gates of hell and beyond. If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, I want to let you know in a little secret. You hear a lot about the bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm here to tell you there's a bottom below the bottom you know. And that is really a sad, sad thing. I've seen that happen. But I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath the bridge and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places, traveled around. Went from reform school, to junior penitentiaries, to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I'm a little more partial to nut house. It's a little more macho. Oh, come on, for Christ's sake. If you're going to be bad, you ought to be bad. I mean, don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous works a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. I threw everything into the bed, lost the bed, didn't know what was kicking my tail. I didn't have an idea, not an idea what was wrong with me. I come walking out of institution from the time I was 9 years old until I was 30 years old, in and out all the time, periodically, as physically sober as I am right this moment. And I never one time ever said to myself, self, do you realize how long it's been since you've had a series of those electroshock treatments? Why don't you have a drink? Why don't you have a drink and go out there and kill your baby brother? Have a drink. Tear your mother's heart out one more time. Have a drink. Go out and run them streets with them gangs. Do them things on them streets as these people do out there on them streets. Commit that mayhem out there. Have a drink and do that. Nope. I never took a drink of alcohol in my life to get drunk. Sorry. Alcoholics do not begin to drink to get drunk. I don't drink to have a party. I don't drink to get out of it. I drink because just to go, just to take an easy breath. But you see, for an alcoholic of my type, it's all it takes. Because once I put alcohol into my system, then am I only then am I drinking to overcome this thing called the phenomenon of craving. And I don't understand it. And it goes on and on and on and on and on. I was talking to David about it yesterday, man. I don't know why that happens to people like me because I never knew the dilemma. I'm sitting on a furlough from reform school. I guess I'm 10 or 11 years old, and I'm drinking a bottle of cheap Marco Petri red wine. See, I'm a very unique guy. I started on cheap wine and worked down. and that ain't easy. But I'm sitting there around my little gang, and we're playing gang, you know. I mean, we're playing gang. That's all they do is play gang. You know what I mean? We've got our colors. And we're so hip the balls of our feet tickles when we walk around. They haven't improved on it in 50 years, I can tell you that. And a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, why don't you try these? He gave me some pills. And I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? I just took them. Thank God they weren't X-Lax. Could you imagine the discussion in some of these discussion meetings? Worked. That's all I can tell you. It was like lighting the afterburners on a rocket ship. It was shooting me straight down to hell, and I don't know that. I mean, I'm going to hell in a handbasket now. I'm already there, but I'm moving on. A couple years later, I'm on that same street corner with my gang on a furlough from another reform school, and a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And For 14 years of my life, the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm, ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. I live out there in the streets. And I do what people like me who live in the street do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. I'm like a plague. There's a reason for that. I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things, and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, and I'm self-serving. I got an ego bigger than this whole room. My entire lifetime spent before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, for a long time after I was here, maybe even a great deal of time today, I really don't have a handle on it. Without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lived upon the face of this earth, I wasn't interested in you at all unless you got something I wanted. Then when I got whatever it is that you got that I wanted, I cast your slide like so much trash, and I go on about my business. That's the way I live my life. Now, I didn't live my life like that one day or one week until I got a court card. I lived my life like that from my earliest recollection of life until a long time after I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. And to sum total of that, at the ripe old age of 26, 27 years old, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. I just could not stand me any longer. And what's significant about that to me today is when I came to in that cell, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But you know what? They should be gone. And I don't have any right to have any of them back. I don't have any right to have anything good and decent in my life just because I come into AA and got sober and stayed that way. Everything that's good and decent in my life is an unearned gift that I got from this God I discovered here. Everything. Bar nothing. I don't know that, but that's what stumbled into your rooms that day in November 1959. And I came in like people me come in. I don't come here to get anything, give anything. I come here to get something. I don't know what it is. I really believe from the very depths of my soul I come here to find another group of people to hate. Because if you're like me, sooner or later you're going to run out of them. You're going to get every single one of them. They're going to be gone, and you ain't going to have nothing left to hate. So you got to keep finding something to hate, because for God's sake, you can't assume the responsibility for your action. It has to be somebody else's fault. It has to be them. If they'd only done this, if they'd only done that, blah, 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 blah. I learned that laying on a psychiatrist's couch, that it wasn't my fault. It was the way I was raised as a child. He didn't understand when I told him I was raised by the state. So he could blame the state for it, indict them for something, for Christ's sake. But I moved in my first meeting. I remember like it was yesterday, almost 45 years ago. I hope I don't ever forget the condition I was in when I came here. I always know what a newcomer thinks when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was a newcomer. Never forgot that. I moved in and sat down where people like me sit in the back row. Leaned up on my throne of contempt. Had my coat collar up and my shades on. So I was hip. I mean, I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler, I'd have probably froze to death, for God's sake. But there I sit. I got answers for questions that ain't never been asked yet. I know so much about everything, I don't know nothing. Lean up against the wall, see two big A's upon the backboard, and I think, my God, I've wandered into an anti-aircraft brigade. What the hell is this? I said to this guy sitting next to me. He said, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I sunk down in my seat. How many by see the big gangster hanging out with them winos? Come on. If it had been Gangsters Anonymous or Over-Hip Anonymous or... Dope Fiends Anonymous. Something had a little ring of pizzazz about it. You know what I mean? But Alcoholics Anonymous? Dope Fiend! Makes addicts seem kind of candy-ass, don't it? But there I said, I don't have a clue what's wrong with it. Here, and this is what frightens me sometimes. I'm sitting in this room, staring at an answer that I had sold my soul for. But I don't recognize the answer because I don't know what the problem is. I can't repeat that enough to you. Time and time and time again. You cannot seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what it is. And I didn't have a clue. My life depended on me understanding it. So meatball. Well, I don't know. I'm in Tulsa, for Christ's sake. But I know. What brought me, what got my fascination in Alcoholics Anonymous were these people. Now, I don't understand them. I don't understand what they're doing. Because, see, takers don't understand things like this. These people got up on Sunday morning. Sunday morning. They got in their cars, bought their own gasoline. There were no paid AA members in those days. And they drove 100 miles up those old back roads, spent 2 hours talking to a room full of people that didn't want to listen to them. People like me who sat in the back row and made fun of them. It took me a long time to realize how very sick that was. Here I am sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home, and I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. There's something wrong with that. I don't know what it is, but there is something wrong with that. They fascinate me. The reason I don't really understand them, and the reason people like me don't understand these people, because for the first time in my life, I'm looking at givers. I'm looking at people who are giving a little just for the hell of giving, expecting nothing in return. And see, I'm a taker. I don't understand that. Takers do not understand givers. Takers only hang out with takers anyhow. That's why they're all losers. The dilemma of the taker is you got to keep moving all the time because you eat up this one's. You got to keep moving. You got to find new victims to take from. And my dilemma was that I run out of people to take from. And I didn't understand it. They fascinated me. And I said to a guy one day, I said to him, what do you get out of coming up here anyhow? I didn't say it like that because I was hip in those days. I mean, I had. I said, you like to look at the animals in the cages? What's your deal? He said, well, when you can answer that question, son, you won't have to ask it. I pondered that for a month. What the hell does he mean by that? See, I don't understand that. That's too simple for intellectual giants like me with brain damage. I mean, it's too deep for me. I mean, when I can answer those questions, and when you losers in here can understand that, you won't have to ask the question either. You don't understand why anybody would get here at 7 o'clock and make coffee so you can have it when you take time to get here whenever you feel like it. You don't understand why anybody would set up a meeting so you could come in and pop your rusty butt down in it without doing anything. You don't understand why anybody would be general service or central service or drive somebody nuke to a meeting or go to drying out joint or something like that. When you can understand that, you don't have to ask questions because you made the transition. And I don't know a lot about a lot of things, but I do know something as a natural fact. My old sponsor, Norm Alper, used to talk about an invisible line, a crossing over from controlled to uncontrolled drinking. I don't have any qualm with that whatsoever. But I'm here to tell you, based on my experience, there's an invisible line in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're an alcoholic of my type, and you don't cross over that line, you're going to die drunk. I don't care what anybody tells you. I don't care what your sponsor tells you. I don't care what anybody tells you. An invisible line in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that invisible line is where you've got to cross over from being a taker to being a giver. And you got to learn to give a little just for the hell of giving, expecting nothing in return, not even staying sober. You just give because that's the thing to do. And if you're an alcoholic of my type and you don't cross over that line, you're going to die drunk. And if you're not an alcoholic of my type, if you're a heavy drinker or a pot smoker or whatever you are, your life is not in jeopardy anyhow, so why would you have to do anything like that? I don't understand that when I'm new. I don't understand anything. I sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was new, and you proved to me I was not alcoholic. I didn't want to be one anyhow, but you proved to me I wasn't. You'd get at podiums like this and say things like this. I used to drink, now I don't drink anymore. Everything is just wonderful. And where I'm sitting back there in Inventory Point, what that said to me is I'm an alcoholic. Because I'm as physically sober as the guy saying that, and I'm crazy. I used to say to myself, God, I wish I was alcoholic. If I could just be alcoholic, then all I'd have to do is not drink, and I'd be okay. But I'm as physically sober as that guy. He's telling me everything's wonderful since he quit drinking. He put the plug in the jug and state in the state and come to AA and God's kids are graduating from high school and marrying Rose Bowl heroes and stuff. And 2 months ago, he was in a dumpster, for Christ's sake. That's what happens to alcoholics when they get sober. How could I be an alcoholic? Every time I get sober, I go insane, for Christ's sake. They lock me up in a nut house somewhere or put me in solitary confinement. How could I be an alcoholic? That's what sobriety is to me. Crawling around on the floor somewhere, barking at the moon. A little hole in the wall or floor down. That's what sobriety is to me. That's what being sober means to me. Sobriety means nightmares of atrocities I'd committed. My mother standing across a gravesite from my baby brother in 1951 while I'm handcuffed between two detectives, staring at me with that look, that hateful look. Look what you've done now, scum. You've killed our baby. That's what sobriety is to me. I got to face that, and I don't know what to do about it. My answer came in a very simple way. I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that was the day I was supposed to be someplace and do something. I didn't have any idea that that was the day somebody was going to knock on the gates of hell and let me out. But I didn't even know I was in hell, if you want to know the truth. But if hell was any hotter than where I was that day, I hope I never get there. If I had been armed with that information, you'd have a different speaker here tonight. Because I wouldn't have went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. See, I wasn't conditioned to go to Alcoholics for answers. I was conditioned to go to the people I'd been going to for 20 years to tell me what was wrong with me, but give me no solutions. They'd tell me things like, don't drink, you'll be okay. If you don't drink these things and swallow these things and shoot these things, you'll be okay. Just don't do it. And what they never took consideration every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. And I'm crazier than a loon. And I don't know what's going on. A man walked in that day, a guy did 23 flat years in the penitentiary, and stood at a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, very much like this. And I don't remember him telling me, put the plug in the jug. He said this, you don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. Very simple statement, isn't it? You don't have to do it like this no more. God, nobody ever told me that. Nobody. All these great learned people with them things all over the walls didn't know that. They just said, don't do it. They didn't tell me how to live without doing it. Went up to him after the meeting and said, how do you learn how to live, Les? That's all I wanted to know. I didn't want to know how to be sober. I want to know how you can live, how you can sleep all night without these nightmares. How can you live in a world that you don't belong to and you don't know anything about without something in you? How do you do that? What do you do? And he said, Johnny, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. I go home and pray that you find some part of you in it. It's a very simple message. It's the message that's being lost in Alcoholics Anonymous today. The book. I am a product of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. My life is the byproduct of the actions taken out of a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went into the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't go there to get sober and stay sober and live a good life. I went into the book Alcoholics Anonymous to prove to you my case was different, that it wouldn't work for me. And I started to fulfill the conditions of Alcoholics Anonymous as outlined in a book called Alcoholics Anonymous and do the things without any outside interference. And I sat in a room with a man one day doing what our program recovery says is the fifth step, and I heard myself say a very simple thing. I heard myself say to that man that I was an alcoholic. And from the very depths of my soul, there came a feeling that I carry with me at this very instant. As I stood before you today and tonight, there's one thing that I know more than anything else. I'm an alcoholic. I suffer from this malady called alcoholism. I am not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something or other, I couldn't have this program. And the reason I couldn't have it is I separated me from you. I'm not like you. Don't you understand that? I'm a little better than you. I'm a little smarter than you, a little slicker than you, a little hipper than you. But I'm not like you. When I became just like you, or at least like the people who wrote this book, it became my great privilege to be allowed to practice the only program of recovery for alcoholics of my type in 7,000 years of recorded history. This is the only thing that worked for people like me. and I get to do it. That's what blows my mind. I get the privilege of practicing this program a day at a time in my life and living this good life. That's what blows my mind. I get to go to meetings. I get to make coffee at meetings. I get to set up meetings. I get to sit in my chair on Monday night, the same chair I've sat in for the last 35 years, every Monday night. I get to do stuff like that. I get to pick up a telephone and have somebody talk to me on the other end of the phone, another alcoholic. I get to go see sick, suffering alcoholics locked up in institutions. And I get to walk. I get to do that. I don't have to. I just get to. What a great privilege that is. I walked out of that penitentiary on the 4th day of June, 1961, armed with only one thing, the first 9 steps of our program of recovery. Into a world that I knew nothing about, and a life that I had no working knowledge about. I didn't know anything. I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have a Social Security card. I didn't know what it was like to have a bank account. I didn't know what it was like to pay taxes. I didn't know what it was like to pay rent. I didn't know what it was like to do anything. I was just nothing, what I was. And I came out with a dream that maybe someday you would allow me the privilege of coming and sitting with you. That's all. And I said to myself, I didn't tell anybody else, if they will give me the privilege of coming and sitting in their meetings, I'll do anything they ask me to do. I'm very pleased to report to you tonight that for over 43 years of my life, I have done whatever it is that Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me to do. And as I stand before you tonight, I can tell you this without a doubt in my mind. I don't know anybody who lives any better than I do, if you want to know the truth. I don't. Well, I know people have more things than I do, but that don't mean they live any better than I do. You know what it's like to live all day long with some type of comfort and peace inside of you? I do. I go periods of time and want nothing for myself whatsoever. To a taker like me, that's unheard of. And the only thing that's been added into my life in all these years is this book and these people. I went home to see my mother. She fell off the steps blind drunk. Picked her up and put her on a couch. Said, Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting. She said, fine, I think you should. I like to tell you, I got sober, and my mother got sober, and the dog got sober, and the cats got sober. And we're the sober, sober, sobers. That's not my experience. My mother drank herself to death. And I had a ringside seat watching it. A ringside seat. Powerless to do anything about it whatsoever. You want to know how much power you got? Watch somebody you love drink themselves to death and try to sober them up. I remember one time my mother was drunk and she came home drunk and I had her down on the floor hitting her in the face with a pamphlet on sponsorship, for Christ's sake. And I realized what I was doing. I was crazier than a loon. And I got up and ran to a meeting. There was an old lady that I used to know was new and went to a lot of institutions with when I was new. And she's standing in the meeting. I come running across the street crazier than a loon. My eyes, you know, I used to think crazy. No, I mean, you've ever seen crazy people, but you ever see one, you'll know it. Some of you ought to get up and look in the mirror sometime. But I don't judge. And this lady said to me, what's the matter with you? I said, it's my mother. She said, what's the matter with your mother? I said, she's drunk. I've been over there working on her for 3 days, and she just stays drunk. Not drunk. And she said to me, oh, I feel sorry for you. Well, that's what I wanted. I told her. She said, yeah. You've been over there spending all your time trying to get somebody sober who obviously doesn't want it. And if somebody who needed Alcoholics Anonymous come to you tonight, you ain't got nothing to give. Then she told me what I thought was the cruelest thing I'd ever heard anybody say. Never deny anybody the privilege of suffering, because suffering brings about surrender. There's a level of pain in surrender that brings about surrender. It's hard to describe. And if you haven't felt it, you would never understand what I'm talking about. I was the last thing in this world my mother ever saw. I held my mother's hand when she died. The last 2 months of my mother's life were horrible. Horrible. But I had her there. I took care of her. I put her in the hospital and I went to see her. And I took her out of the hospital and put her in a home and went to see her. And when she had a heart attack, I took her back and put her in another hospital. The moment my mother died, if you'd have said to my mother, "Aren't you proud of your son, Johnny? Man, he came out of them streets, out of them gangs, out of them penitentiaries, out of them deals that he was doing. He found that thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, found out he was an alcoholic, and now he's sober, and he's doing a good job, and he got a family and a home, and aren't you proud of your son, Johnny? You know what my mother would have told you? In her dying breath, she'd have said to you, my son's not an alcoholic. His life got a lot better when he quit running around with them Mexicans. That's my mother, not me. Now, I guess if you talk to one of these psychobabble idiots, 90-day wonders who've just fell out of a treatment center somewhere, he'll probably come up and say, I guess your mama was in a state of denial. A denial's a river in Egypt. Alcoholics do not suffer from denial. You know what a denial is? It's a flat lie. And the person who says they're in denial is a liar. You know why I know that? Every time I got arrested, I denied it. I didn't do that. We caught you with your hand in the cookie jar. I didn't do it. We got your picture. I didn't do it. You got the dope. We got the dope. You had it in your pocket. It's not mine. It's my mother's. See, that is a denial. An alcoholic suffers from a delusion. A delusion. That their alcoholic life is the only normal one. They do not know the truth from the false. An alcoholic does not know the truth from the false. And they think their alcoholic life is the only normal one. That's what an alcoholic is. A denial is some phraseology some clown dreamed up somewhere. We're not in denial. We're not in full flight from reality. We're drinking to overcome a malady that we don't understand. A spiritual malady, if you will. And we don't understand it because we don't understand the spiritual nature of our illness. We just don't understand it. My mother never understood it. And my mother, I'll tell you this about my mother tonight. My mother doesn't drink anymore. I watched my mother die, and it was the first time I saw peace come over my mother since 1951 when we stood at my baby brother's graveside. And when I tell you that alcoholics of my type either get sober and stay that way or die or go crazy, I know from which I'm talking about. This is not some type of a hanky-panky thing that you're doing here. This is a matter of life and death. And it's my life. If everybody in this room went out and got drunk tonight, I wouldn't. And I wouldn't get it. I'm not going to do it. It would make me sad, and I'd hurt and cry probably and feel bad. But I get on that airplane tomorrow and stay sober and go home. It's a very simple thing. I ran into a guy one night in a meeting who introduced himself as my sponsor, who taught me about Alcoholics Anonymous, or at least about the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I knew a great deal about a program of recovery, but I have to be taught about a fellowship. I have to be taught how to behave here. I have to show you how to live this program with some degree of dignity. That I got to learn how to become and blend into the crowd and become one among many, not the one. I don't need to stand out in the crowd. I don't need to dress up and wear costumes to stand out in the crowd. I just have to learn to be one among many. That's the only way you can stay here. A cruel man my sponsor was. Told me to get a job and go to work. Told me to get off of welfare. Told me to dress up and look like I was better, act like I was better than a newcomer. Wouldn't let me drive a car because I didn't have a driver's license. I said, how am I supposed to get around? He said, drive your little girl's bicycle around. What? I got to drive right through my old neighborhood to get to that meeting I want to go to. My old partners are standing on the street corner around their big irons and their flashy suits. My little girl's bicycle is pink. Got a big back wheel and a little bitty front wheel. White sidewalls. Got a little basket on it with a bell. And I had to ride that right through my neighborhood. And I hear things like, "Hey, widow, that ain't really worked, don't it, baby?" Yeah, it works. A few months ago, I was up in Folsom Prison. Some of my old partners are still there. And I had the privilege to tell them, "Yep, AA really does work, dude. I'm going home and you're staying." And I was wearing the $1,000 suits and they were wearing jeans. That's a magnificent thing, this program. My sponsor taught me so very much. He taught me how to behave around you. He taught me to be more concerned about your well-being than I am my own. Told me if I didn't want to sit around and listen to meetings, I just, not to disturb the people sitting next to me, because he said that's an act of a selfish, self-centered person. He told me, "You're selfish and self-centered." I said, "Well, I worked the program." He said, "I don't care, you're still selfish, self-centered. Shut up. Let somebody else have the benefit of AA if you don't want to listen to it." He went on and on and on. On and on and on. And what he introduced and put into my life is something I'll carry with me till the day I die. A love and a respect for Alcoholics Anonymous that I carry with me more today than I did any day since I've been here. I respect and love Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never forgotten what it's like to be a newcomer. I never have been to a meeting in my life when I didn't think the newcomer, worry about the newcomer in the meeting. I've sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous if I'd heard that when I was a newcomer, I'd have left and never come back. If I'd seen some of the actions that are taken on in some of these things called Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd have left and never came back. It's just an amazing thing that happens. So I think about newcomers, so I'm surrounded by them. You know what you think about your surrounding? I get the goofiest people in the world to sponsor, present company included. I mean, I don't know why I get these bent fenders, for Christ's sake. I was up in Fresno one time. A guy that I sponsored moved to Fresno, and I went up there and he called me out and walked around the parking lot and he said this. He said, "I don't understand this, sponsor." And I said, "What?" He said, "It seemed like every bent fender, every dippy-doo in the world asked me to sponsor him. I really don't know what to do about that. What do you think?" I said, "Well, I really don't know what to tell you, but I know how you feel." If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, just go to another meeting. If you hear in that meeting something that isn't written in our book, it isn't true. And I don't care where the meeting is or who it's telling about it. Because the whole answer to anything that you ever need in your life, they told me when I was new, lies between the covers of the book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm living proof that that's true. That no matter what my problem may be today, I can open up that book and find an answer or solution to it. There's a whole chapter in there on the solution. There's a whole chapter on the nature of the disease of alcoholism. There's a whole chapter on working with others. There's a whole chapter onto the agnostic. There's a whole chapter on how it works. There's whole chapters. I mean, you don't have to take my word for it. You don't have to take anybody's word for it. The book has chapters and volumes on all these things. And all you have to do is pick it up and do it. That's what I did. That man told me 44 years ago to go find that book and maybe I'd find some part of me in it. And that's exactly what happened. Oh, not the me that I think I am, or not the image that I want to portray that I am, but the me. When I used to lay up in them cells at night in solitary, I used to ask myself questions. You see, there ain't nobody around to play my little macho games with. And I'm asking myself these little questions. I wonder whatever happened to that little blonde-haired, blue-eyed kid who just wanted to play baseball. Where did he go? What happened to him? I didn't have an answer for it at all. I didn't know what happened, how he got swallowed up into that gang thing and that drug thing and those street things. I don't know how he got swallowed up into the thing and that life in them penitentiaries. I didn't know. I just had no answers for it. But you know what the book Alcoholics Anonymous done? It's introduced me to that little blonde-headed, blue-eyed kid who just wants to play baseball. He's returned, and from time to time I'm introduced to him again. If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, you give yourself a break. You really don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. Every living thing I have in my life, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. Every living thing I may ever hope to have in my life, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you better believe this. It is a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA, and good people like you, I could have missed it all. Thank you very much.